morning, everybody. I call this meeting of the Conference Committee for House File 2, Paid Family and Medical Leave, to order. Quorum is present. Members, we have come to some substantive agreement on the bill. So our agenda for today will include having nonpartisan staff run through items of agreement. We will then move to adopt the agreed upon sections and consider further amendments. We will also have staff run through the fiscal pieces of that and adopt that report. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Fontaine from Senate Research and Marta James from House Research. If you guys have questions during this run through, feel free to ask.
Madam Chair and members, we are going to be working from the side-by-side document. I will be going through conversations have been around what language would be included and some other changes that will be made to the language. And then there will also be some amendments coming forward that are being prepared. I will note when I get to those sections where those amendments will be forthcoming. So on page R1, we are going to start with the section that we will be including will be the Senate Section 1. So that was on the family and medical insurance data. We will not be including the word incapacitated person, though. So that will be deleted from line 1.17. I also want to mention that the effective dates throughout the bill will be to be determined. However, the effective date for when the benefit program will go into place will be January 1, 2026. There will be some other effective dates that will be to be determined. But for now, the discussions have been for a January 1, 2026 effective date. So I'm not going to talk about all the effective dates for every section at this point, other than that statement. And I'm not sure. I can continue to go. Is Ms. James, is she on? I wasn't. And I don't know if she wants to do, if we're taking a House side or if I can keep going. Should I go for a little bit longer? Okay. So I will continue. Then on R1, we are going to be looking at Section 2 that from the House side. This is a definition for us from the it's an insurance term of policy of accident and sickness insurance. We are bringing that into the conference committee report. Then on R1, we are going to also go with the House language, which was similar for the compliance orders. And that goes over to page R2. On R2, I believe we already adopted the required statement of earnings by employer, notice to employee, so that we will take the House language on that. For Section 4, that's down from R2 to R3. Then we go to R4 on the Senate side. Do we make a decision on this? We are including this as well. This has to do with employed persons with disabilities and the interaction if they're receiving family and medical leave benefits. So that clarifies how that would interact with those persons with disabilities. So we are including the Senate language then over to page R6. Then on R6 on the House language, we are still waiting for a decision on this language, so we will put a pause on Section 5 from the House. This is for the personal care assistance choice option. We are moving on then to page R9. We've already adopted, the Conference Committee has already adopted Section 8. This is the use of data, data that's collected as part of the family and medical leave program. So you'll see the new language there on 10.6 on page R10 that's being included here in this section regarding data. Then we get to on page R11, we have this is where the definitions begin for the program, and this is quite a few pages. I may be going back and forth a little bit on this particular area. So on our 11 definitions, we're going to first start with Section 9 of the House language. And we're going to take all that language on this page. So that includes the base period language from the House. So all of the base period language goes over to page R13 down to line 12.13. On the definition of benefit on line 12.14 to 12.16, I also want to point out that there's been a decision on related to the term pregnancy as it's used in this chapter. And so what the decision has been is on line 12.15, it is instead of just using the term pregnancy, it is now going to be medical care related to pregnancy to clarify that we're not talking about the entire pregnancy as a condition, but just to that medical care. And I'm not sure if anyone needs to speak to this, but just mentioning that is what the decision has been made for the terminology. We are going to continue then on the House language all the way through R13. So we will turn to page R14. We're also including the House language for construction industry on line 1312 to 1315. On line 1316, we are going to take the definition. It's going to be modified for subdivision 14. It's going to be for active duty. And what will be reflected is that on line 1317, before the period, we're going to say it includes domestic deployment as well, because I believe that the federal definition talks about only deployment outside of the contiguous 48, or outside of the country. So this also includes domestic deployment. Then we will, let's see, so then on the definition of covered employment, lines 1318 to 1332, we are taking the House language. However, on lines 1323, 1324, 1326, and 1329, the term quarter, it's going to be changed from quarter to year instead of as it is right now. So I just want to point that out. That is how it will be in the draft report.
And 13.30.
13.30 as well. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair,
if I can borrow your pen, 13.30. Okay. And then we will move over to page R15. We are also putting a pause on the seasonal employees that the Senate contains in their definition of employee. You will see that language on lines 10.9 to 10.17. They are so language will be forthcoming on clarifying seasonal employees. So then we are going to continue on page R15 with Senate language on the definition of employer. So that's lines 10.18 through the bottom of the page. You know, there are just a couple little differences clarifying that it applies to boards or commissions. And then there's some employee leasing language on line 10.31 that will be coming in that the House did not contain. So we will move on to page R16. We will not be including the on lines 15.4 to 15.6. The House still had the insurance enforcement account. That will not be part of the final program language. So that's not coming in, but then we will include the lines 15.7 to the bottom of the page on the House. We'll be taking the House definition of family member, and just to let the Conference Committee know that. We will continue down to House language for the family member to line 1530 then on the House side. We will move over to the Senate side for the definition of healthcare providers. So I'm looking at lines 12.3 to 12.16. That's on R17. The Commerce Committee is not including the Senate's incapacitated person concept. You'll see that at line 1217 to 1219. That will not be included. Then we'll move back over to the House side, line 1614 to 1627. We will include the House language. I want to point out on 16.27, again, inserting before pregnancy, it will read medical care related to pregnancy. So we continue over to R18. We will take the, or looking at the House language, lines 1628 to 1632. Stillbirth, it needs to be all one word. So we will take the House language on that. But then we will move over to the Senate language on R18, looking at lines 13.6 to 13.32, taking all those for the Senate definitions. In particular, I want to point out the self-employed individual definition, line 13.28. This will be including one taxable year for those, for the self-employed individual, the that's what they'll be looking at for their income. So it'll just be 1 year for that. On lines, then so we're going to continue with the Senate language onto our page R19. The Senate has the amount of time for incapacity is, we're looking at is 7 days, 7 or more days, and it was different in House. It was for 3 consecutive full calendar days. So I think we don't have any other changes there except for on line 14.17, instead of the word employees, it will be now, we're changing that to individuals. So I just want to reflect that for the record. On page R20, we're going to continue with Senate language. So all of that will be Senate language. And so that includes the lines at 15.29 to 15.30. Regarding that the supplemental benefits combined with any leave benefits received cannot exceed the regular wage or salary of the applicant. So we're including that within, with regard to supplemental benefit payments. And then on
lines 15.6, we'll take out the word consecutive.
That's, I knew there was something on that. So I'm sorry, Madam Chair, on line 15.6, delete consecutive.
Would it also be on 15.15?
Madam Chair, is it also, it should also be then. Thank you, Senator McQuaid. Lines 15.15, delete consecutive after 7. Okay, so then if we're okay with that page.
No, that stays.
That stays.
Okay. Yeah, that stays, I'm sorry.
Okay. If the revisor is listening, we will reinsert consecutive on line 15.15.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. I believe, Madam Chair, that you sent me an email that I am sending to the revisor, so this might be duplicated, and she might already know about this.
Perfect.
But if you have anything you want to add, please chime in. On page R21, we have the definition. For the definition of wages, I just wanted to point out that I know it looks like a really long definition that we're not taking from the House, but it is basically the same definition as the unemployment insurance definition. So we're just going to do a cross-reference to save some words. So we can move over to page R24, and we will take the Senate language on all of the site except for I will point out that we are not including on line 17.7, we're not clarifying that employees are serving the classified civil service of the state. So that is being removed from the discussion. We are continuing down then on page R25 to include, I believe we've received some language. So you'll see subdivision 6 on the Senate side. It's regarding procurement. There was a discussion about this on the Senate floor the other day. On line 17.23 to 17.26, we have received some language from Deed that is tightening up the references to the particular statutes instead of to an entire chapter. So that will be language that will be forthcoming in an amendment. So we will begin, keeps on R25, we will take the House language on Section 11, that's lines 24-23, down to the bottom of the page. There will be inserted, though, on line 24.32, after benefits, it will read, due to misrepresentation. Just want to reflect that. That's already on the Senate side, but we're bringing it over. Moving over to page R26, we will be taking the Senate language on Section 8, benefit account benefits. So that language is from 1814 all the way down to to R27. We are including the Senate language for the maximum length of benefits. So that is through R27. Moving on to R28, we will also be taking the Senate language on R28. On R29, we, I think we already adopted this, Section 13, Section 9 for the Senate regarding notification of changed circumstances, so that is included. We're looking at Section 14 on the House side, page R29, for the eligibility requirements, payments that affect benefits. Again, on 29.12, before pregnancy, we will insert or medical care related to pregnancy, and then put a period after that, and then a delete or recovery from pregnancy for the period required under the subdivision. So moving on to our 30, again, we'll be looking at the House language. Again, insertion on 29.25 of medical care related to pregnancy, deleting recovery from pregnancy after that. On page R31, this is a little complicated page, but I will, we're taking the House language, we're taking the Senate language on lines 20, so I believe it's House language all the way through 30.31. And then we will move to the Senate language on 23.6 to 23.10, back over to include on the House side lines 31.4 and 31.5. Then we're moving back to the Senate language from 23.11 to 23.20. And Madam Chair, if I am stating incorrectly, please jump in.
I don't think you are, but can you repeat what you said?
Okay. So I believe what I have here is we took all of the House language from R30, except for, as I mentioned, related medical care related to pregnancy, strike that language, recovery from pregnancy. Then we are continuing down
one addition there. We just took that one sentence from the Senate on 2213 and 2215, starting at if the applicant requests.
Yes, we are. That was a late breaking addition.
Yep.
My apologies.
Nope.
So we will. So on line 30.15 of the House language, after that, we will insert lines 22.13 to 22.15. After condition, there's a sentence regarding intermittent leave that will come over to after line 30.5, the period. Does everyone understand? Okay, very good. This has also been communicated to the reviser, or will be communicated to them. So we have that. Thank you, Madam Chair. So we will move on to page R31. So we're taking the House language down through line 30.31. Then we will move over to the Senate language, taking lines 23.6 to 23.10. This is paragraph F. Then moving back to take to the House language to take lines 31.4 to 31.5. Mm-hmm. And then we are moved back over to the Senate language for lines 23.11 to 23.20. That is paragraphs G, and then talking about eligibility, mm-hmm. or not eligible. And then we move back over to the House language, lines 31.17 to 31.23. Mm-hmm. And finally, we want to take language from the Senate paragraph B, lines 23.28 to 23.31.
Perfect.
And then that goes down to... We move over to R32, and we take 24.1 on the Senate to 24.2. Okay, that page was a rough page, but we will move back over to on R32. We will, we're looking at lines 31.30 down to the bottom of the page, 32.29. This is from the House language. We'll also include R33, all of the House language. So that includes all of the Social Security disability benefits. Most of this language is all the same. So I think it's just some wording choice differences. Then, so that includes Section 15, Determination on Issues of Eligibility, page R33, House language. We continue through R34, also with House language. And then on R35, House language for the appeals process. Madam Chair, are we waiting for something on this appeals process, or is that a different piece?
We have, we are waiting for just some technical changes to that process. We are waiting on language.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's also as I recall. We are also waiting for some language on the regarding the 90-day right to leave piece. Madam Chair, are we, is that correct? Okay, so for now, we will put a pause on that exact conversation. So we're going to leave Section 17 on the House side, but Madam Chair, do we want to include on R36, do we want to talk about, include lines 36.4 to 36.27, except for on 36.12, we're deleting or on a reduced schedule basis?
No, I think we we're accepting the Senate language on that side.
We are accepting the Senate language on that side. Okay. Okay. Then Madam Chair, we are also, my notes indicate that we're also going to include page R36 to R37, all of the Senate language from line 29.1 to 30.2.
That is correct.
Okay.
But we are also going to add the House language on 36.25 to 36.27.
Yes. But, Madam Chair, so after line 28.25,
yes,
we will move over the House language, lines 36.25 to 36.27.
Correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we can move on to page R38. My notes indicate we'll take the Senate language from lines 30.3 to 30.10. Mm-hmm. Are we coming back to the paragraph D, lines 30.11 to 30.16?
We are,
there's a question on that.
Yeah, we're waiting for some language on that one.
Okay, this is more, this is outstanding. We will, come back to this at a later time. Continuing on page R38, this we will be taking the House language beginning at line 38.3. This is Section 18 regarding employment protections. We will take that language on the House side from R38 to R39. Also the language continuing on the House through page R40. And then on R41, it is all, it is the House language. However, we're going to bring over the language from, that is on the Senate side, lines that's highlighted from lines 33.16 to 33.19. And also the language that's highlighted on lines 33.28 to 33.30. So are we including the 90 day? From the Senate side?
Yes.
Okay.
And then we also have an additional language to make that.
Yes.
It's not here yet.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Continuing on to page R42, we are, the agreement is to take all of the House language on R42. Also on R43, all of the House language except we will be bringing over paragraph C, lines 35.22 to 35.24. We will
paragraph E.
paragraph E. I don't have my readers. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Then, on page R44, private plan requirements, medical benefit program, my notes indicate that we have the Senate language on this side, except, and then on line 37.5, we are going, after condition, we will insert or medical care related to pregnancy to bring in that concept from the House side.
Madam Chair, I have a question about this medical care related to pregnancy. Do you want me to wait till the end or?
Yeah, because we're going to see it
a multiple times. Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator McQuaid. On page R45, we will continue with the Senate language. However, we're going to change a shall to a must on line 36.19. And we aren't doing that everywhere, but the meeting yesterday indicated that was the desire. On page R46, we will continue with Senate language until line 39.6. Switching over to House language on subdivision 9 regarding employer reimbursement. So that is lines 46.33 through 47.11. And then on to R47, continuing with House language to line 47.24. And then we will turn back to Senate language on line 39.24 this is subdivision 14 on amendment to a private plan. So that's through R47 through the bottom of the page. On R48 and R49, this is all Senate language. Page R50 is also Senate language on the wage reporting. To R51, on line 44.13, we need to change chapter to section. And then the rest is also Senate language. So section 18, employer premium accounts, is Senate language. Moving back then to page R52, we will take the House language down through line 53.30, except for on line 53.23, after employee, insert a period and delete the rest of the line. And also on 53.24, delete everything before the period. On page 50, and then on line 53.27, delete the word contract. So the language, as I mentioned, is through 53.30 for the House language. On page R52, we're still there. We're going to be taking the Senate language for the small business wage exclusion. So line 45.29, that's to 45.32, and then also through page R53, with some changes that I will specify right now. On R53, Senate language, line 46.6, we are going to be deleting the word employer, so it's just going to be the premium rates. On line 46.8, delete the highlighted language. On 46.9, delete the highlighted language. So from all three lines here, we're going to be removing employer participating
Carmen,
in.
We changed that. Changed. Oh, so we're going to keep the Senate language on that one. So we make it clear that it is the employer premium that we're talking about.
Okay, Madam Chair. So strike that. We will be keeping the highlighted language in the Senate language. But there are a couple other little changes we do need to make. On line 46.10, delete 0.57% and insert 0.4. On line 46.12, delete 0.13% and insert 0.3. And then on line 46.15, delete 1 and insert 1.2. Those are the changes for that page then. Moving on to page R54, I believe we already adopted we're taking all the Senate language On this side, we already adopted Section 20, I believe, for the income tax withholding. Also already adopted the collection of premiums section. So that's down through page R54 to R55. Senate language also through R56 regarding the child support deduction from benefits. We've already adopted on R57 the compromise section, Section 23 on the Senate side, also Section 24. We will be taking the Senate language there. The difference was just a reference to including the Department of Commerce. So that's R57. R58, again, Senate language, including the Department of Commerce for the public outreach. For on R58, we are waiting for some penalty language, I believe, coming from deed for overpayment penalties. So would you like to include this section for now, or are we still waiting for some language from deed, Madam Chair?
I think we were still waiting.
Oh, for the 15%?
Yeah, we're waiting for language.
Yeah, we will put a pause on Section 26 from the Senate side, but I believe we were looking at the Senate language for this, just waiting for a little more language. Mm-hmm. So if we move down then to R59, I am indicating still. Manager, are we on R59?
Yep.
Okay, R59. We are going to remove the language on lines 53. We're not including the lines 15.13. Paragraph E, or lines 15.13 to 15.17.
Correct.
Okay. Moving over to page R60, we have a couple of more. I believe both of these provisions were already included. So Section 27, Section 28 from the Senate language on R60.
One second, Garland, we have a question.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. I think I just got a little bit lost when we were on page R59. I heard you say 15 point something, and I was looking for that. And
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
You might have said something
else. Lines 53.13. My apologies.
Thank you.
53.13 to 53.17 will not be included in either side in the report.
Okay.
In the
thank you for report. That. I appreciate it.
My apologies.
Not a problem.
Madam Chair, on page R61, we already discussed this yesterday. I believe it was adopted, so this was the same language on both sides. Similarly, on page R61, also adopted by the committee. Page R63, also already adopted to R64, R65, then also R66. That's also has been discussed and adopted by the conference committee. To page R67, that language is the same, goes to Senate side 61.22. Then we will, on R67, the discussion has been to include the House language on Section 37 regarding notice requirements. This is line 69.27 down to the bottom of the page. Then we, on page R68, so that's the House language to the bottom of R67. Then at the top of R68, line 62.11 to 62.22, it will be the Senate language. Madam Chair, now we are moving over to page on R68 still. Senate language all the way down through 62.11 to 62.22. Mm-hmm. Over to the House language then. This is with regard to providing the Department of Employment and Economic Development providing uniform employee notice. So on line 71.7 to 71.2, delete everything after the period on line 71.12. So it would include everything until 71.2, the period, and then the rest of the language would not be included. So that will be brought in.
So actually what we'll do is we'll take lines 71.7 to 71.10 and the period after Minnesota and not take the language after that.
Madam Chair, is that what we've decided? Okay, very good. That sounds wonderful. I will get that reflected correctly then. Okay, Madam Chair, then on page R68, we have the, my notes indicate that we have section 38 from the House, except for we are not including lines 72.3 to 72.12. This is clause 4, but we are including line 72.13, and we will renumber that as clause 4.
That is correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page R69, the only change to this section, we'll be taking the House language. The only change to this section is on line 72.19, after of requirements of insert state or federal law. So it will be with regard to whether or not something in this act is inconsistent with state or federal law. So page R69, include that with the change. Moving over to page R70, Madam Chair, the deed has provided some language for the small business assistance grants. This would be coming via amendment. So let's also put a pause on this sections 40 and sections 36 from the Senate language on R70. Mm-hmm. On R71, we will be including sections 37 and 38. This is with regard to, this is line 64.15. Well, actually, all the Senate language all through the bottom, but Section 37 is regarding the direct care provider account that creates that account. 64.22 is for the stakeholder group that the Commissioner of Human Services will convene with the stakeholders on the issue of direct care providers, direct care workers for their premium amounts. And as I mentioned, on line 65.22, Section 40, for the date, the effective date, as I mentioned on line 65.24, will be January 1, 2026. On page R71, we will be taking all of Article. Wait, so I have my notes indicate we will take all the language from the Senate side through R71, so through line 71.11. We can also take all the language from the Senate side on page R72. I have indicated on page R73, we are taking the House language. I don't know that there's any difference, but we can do that. Line 75.11 on the House language through 76.5. Again, we are including a January 1, 2026 date, effective date on line 76.5. For the actuarial study, we also have received some language from DEED on this, I believe, Madam Chair.
That's correct.
Yes, we have. So on page R73, we will put a pause on the exact language for the actuarial study. That is forthcoming via amendment. So that would be through page R74. And finally, I can turn it over to the fiscal staff for discussion regarding the appropriations. I do know that on page R77, that MMB was working on something regarding the enterprise cost-based establishment. I think that was what they're working on, or the transfer language. I can't remember. But I will have Ms. Eng go over now the appropriations, Madam Chair. Thank you. And if anyone has any questions, we can do that.
That was,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Fantastic. Thank you very, very much. Senator Makewade, you had a question.
I do. Or suggestions, potentially.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure that I'm hearing this right. I'm going to go back to wherever we started talking about medical care related to pregnancy. Sorry, medical care related to pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Will you just point me to any one of those lines?
Sure.
I'm trying to find one.
So the first definition will be on page R18 on line 16.31 on the House side.
Thank you. I'm just thinking through my own experience, and I'm wondering if as we go through and all the places we've been changing medical care related to pregnancy, we change it to pregnancy as defined in Section 17, Subdivision 2. And I say that only because like when I was pregnant, I had just horrific morning sickness. And so there were 2 weeks where I wasn't receiving medical care, but I was just throwing up in the house. And so that wouldn't have qualified me to take paid leave, but I would have needed it. And so I'm wondering if we can go back to, I would have been incapacitated due to pregnancy.
I wonder
if we could do that.
Very good point. So the definition is the same, and the word pregnancy here will also be changed to medical care.
Okay.
So it's the exact same thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then my last question is the reduced schedule language. Are we moving away from that?
We are not doing, we're doing intermittent leave, but we're not doing a reduced schedule leave because we heard from businesses that was too complicated.
Oh.
We heard from Dee that it's impossible for the entire state for us to be like, all right, you took a half hour on this day and 45 minutes on this day, and then we have to add that all up. Logistically, it would be an administrative nightmare.
Madam Chair, but could we do something where it's like, because I did half days on my way back, and that
so we went with a full day just to make it easier.
All right, yeah. My boss loved having me back.
Madam Chair, I believe Ms. James was listening to our side-by-side walkthrough. She had a couple of things she was trying to point out. I don't know that she's able to talk. So we could have them go through the spreadsheet, and I will try to figure out the things that she pointed out while I was doing my walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's able to get on and state those, otherwise I will try to address what she's talking about, what she's mentioning in our chat here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. So we can have fiscal walk through that spreadsheet then.
Madam Chair, Ashley Eng, House Fiscal. Looking at the appropriations article on page R74, the numbers from the spreadsheet will be inserted into each section. So on the spreadsheet titled Paid Family and Medical Leave Insurance with the timestamp of 6:45 p.m. in the bottom right corner, looking at the appropriations for deed, these are all from the fiscal note, and they will cover the startup and administrative costs of the program. On line 25 of the spreadsheet to deed, there will be $50,938,000 in fiscal year 24 and $71,357,000 in fiscal year 25, and then the base will be set. I believe. Will we set the base? Check. Okay. And then looking at the columns for fiscal year 26 and 27, this reflects the estimate of benefits paid for those years, but that will not be included in the bill. One point to note here is that the amount will be cut in half because of the shift in the effective date. Now looking at the Department of Labor and Industry, this will be, the total will be on line 37 of the spreadsheet. There will be $601,000 in fiscal year 24, $374,000 in fiscal year 25, and then the base will be set.
And Madam Chair?
The Department of Commerce on line 9 of the spreadsheet.
Actually, one question.
Sorry.
Madam Chair, just going back to the base amount in deed for fiscal year 2026 would be $76 million, and then in fiscal year 2027 would be $73.6 million.
Thank you. The Department of Commerce on line 9, there will be $376 in fiscal year 24 and $316,000 in fiscal year 25. For 24, I meant $376,000, and then the base will be set at $128,000 per year. Going down to Minnesota Management and Budget, on line 48, there will be $118,000 in fiscal year 25, and then the base will be set at $45,000. The Department of Human Services, that is on line 29 of the spreadsheet. There will be $2,649,000 in fiscal year 24, and then a base set of $530,000 per year for their IT. So that takes us through R75. Now the Secretary of State on line 52, that'll be $384,000 in fiscal year 24, $4,000 in fiscal year 25, and then a base of $77,000 per year. The Supreme Court, that will be $15,000 in fiscal year 24, $15,000 in fiscal year 25. And then the legislature, there will be an appropriation of $18,000 in fiscal year 25. Then the University of Minnesota, there will be an appropriation of $1,372,000 in fiscal year 24 for implementation. And then Hannah, do you want to cover the rest?
Madam Chair, moving on to looking back at the spreadsheet, and I believe the transfer in section 11 of both bills shows up on line 69 of the spreadsheet. And I believe the Senate's position will be adopted at $648.3 million transferred to the Family Medical Benefit Insurance account in fiscal year 2024. Okay. Then moving on to R77, section 12 of the Senate position, I believe, will also be adopted, and that's on line 70 of the spreadsheet, which is $20 million transferred to the direct care provider account. And section 13 of the, I believe, of both positions have the same amount of MMB non-operating costs showing up on line 66 of the spreadsheet, a total of $3,049,000 in fiscal year 2026, and the same amount in fiscal year 2027 will be appropriated from the general fund. And Madam Chair, that covers the appropriation articles, and I can just touch on briefly the remainder of the spreadsheet, which goes over the totals if you'd like. You okay? Okay. I think, Madam Chair, I'll just note, As we noted earlier, with the effective date change on the spreadsheet, there'll be one additional change on line 84, page 3. The revenue amount in fiscal year 2026 would be cut in half.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Seeing none.
Madam Chair, if there are none on that, I will go back to some of the comments that Ms. James was making.
Perfect, please.
We have time for that.
Go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair, Ms. James did note on page R54 that the tax treatment provision was not adopted yesterday. I know it's the same, but I believe that Deed has language regarding tax treatment on page...
Yep.
R54. So that will be coming via amendment. So I want to clarify that we did not adopt that.
Okay.
Then on page R61, that is the lien levy language. We also are getting some language for that. So I believe it is the same, but we're getting some revised language from Deed, and we have that as part of the amendment.
Correct. Representative Richardson.
Yeah, I think that language was just going to be a strikeout related to lines 64.9 through 64.11 related to the electronic transmission of a computerized filing system. So, but we can...
Yes, Madam Chair, that's right. It was a pretty easy change,
yeah.
But
We can wait for that.
It will come into the amendment. I'll just, well, it'll just be reflected there. So then the next item that she, that Ms. James noted, let me see if I can get here. Is on Article 2, Section 1. Let's see here. I think there was a cross-reference, a technical cross-reference for in Section 2. I'm not sure which line it is. Ms. James, do you have that right now?
Madam Chair and members, can you hear me?
Oh, there she is.
Okay. It's line 74.3. It's just a purely technical cross-reference to say clauses 1 to 9.
Thank you, Ms. James. Did everyone get that? And then, Ms. James, there was one other, Madam Chair, on, was there another, one other item that we did not discuss correctly? Madam Chair, Ms. James?
Madam Chair, Ms. Doyle-Fontaine, no, you got all three of the things that I noticed.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. James, for watching over us and our work.
All right, so what we're going to do next then is recess to the call of the chair so we can get that amendment language ready to go, and we will go from there. With that, we are recessed. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for your patience today. Thank you for the staff for working incredibly hard all day. We now have some motions on the table. We went through the bill earlier today. We talked about all the agreed-upon language. And so I'm going to move the adoption of the Senate sections, R1, Section 1, R2 through R6, Section 1, R14, Section 5, lines 10.3 to 10.4, R14, Section 5, lines 10.5 to 10.17 as amended, R15, Section 5, lines 10.18 to 11.12, R17, Section 5, lines 12.3 to 12.16, R18, Section 5, lines 13.5 to 16.30 as amended, R24, Section 6, lines 17, 13, and 17, 22. R26, Section 8, lines 18.14 to 21.8. R31, Section 10, lines 23.15 to 23.20. R13, Section 10, lines 23.28 to 24.2. R36, Section 13, lines 28.9 to 28.25. R13, Section 13, lines 28.26 to 30.18. R39, Section 14, lines 31.2 to 34.26 as amended. R43, Section 14, lines 35.22 to 35.24. R43, Section 15, lines 35.27 to 39.6 as amended. R47, Section 15, lines 39.24 to 41.15. R49, Section 16 and 17, lines 41.16 to 44.2. R52, Section 19, lines 45.29 to 46.5. R53, Section 19, lines 46 to 13 to 47.7 as amended. R58, Section 25, lines 51-15. R58, Section 26, lines 51.26 to 53.12 and 53.18 to 53.19. R68, Section 33, lines 62.15 to 62.22. R69, Section 35, lines 63.13 to 63.22 as amended. R17, sections 37, 38, lines 64.15 to 65.1, and R77, section 12, lines 68.1 to 68.4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Senate sections are adopted. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of the House sections. R1, section 2. R6, sections 5 through 7. R11, section 9, lines 10.17 to 12.13. R13, section 9, lines 12.14 to 12.16 as amended. R13, section 9, lines 12.17 to 13.17 as amended. R14, Section 9, lines 13.18 to 14.30 as amended. R16, Section 9, lines 15.13 to 15.30. R17, Section 9, lines 16.14 to 16.32 as amended. R24, Section 10, lines 24.1 to 24.11. R25, Section 11, lines 24.23 to 25.17 as amended. R29, Section 14, lines 29.6 to 31.9. R31, Section 14, lines 31.17 to 31.23. R32, Section 14, lines 31.30 to 35.26. And R36, Section 17, lines 36.25 to 36.27. R38, Section 18, lines 38.3 to 39.19 as amended. R42, Section 18, lines 42.22 to 43.18 as amended. R46, Section 19, lines 46.33 to 47.24. R52, Section 23, lines 52.28 to 55.30. R53, Section 23, lines 54.8 to 54.14. R61, Section 34. Lines 63.27 to 68.17 as amended. R67, Section 37, lines 69.27 to 70.19. R68, Section 37, lines 71.7 to 71.19 as amended. R68, Section 38, lines 71.20 to 72.2. And 72.13 to, I think there's a typo here. Does that go to?
Okay. Say that.
Probably 72.
I think there's a typo here.
72.13 to 15. Okay, I'll restart that. R68, Section 38, lines 71.20 to 72.2 and 72.13 to 72.15. R71, Section 40, lines 73.19 to 73.21 as amended. R71, Sections 1 through 5, lines 73.22 to 76.5 as amended. R74, Sections 1 through 11, lines 76.21 to 78.29.
Very good. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. Next up for consideration, we have some further amendment with new language. I'll bring your attention to the 887 that has been posted publicly. And you should have a handout available to you. What this amendment does is that it makes sure that if someone does take intermittent leave, that they are entitled to their full amount of leave and that their next amount of leave can be taken in a block time. It also adds languages so that people are not penalized essentially for asking for leave. Any questions? Can I get a motion to move the A87?
Madam Chair, I wanted to clarify. Can you give me the line? All right, the secondary one. I apologize. It was on another piece of paper. So I had a question earlier, and I know I had spoken to Chair Richardson about it, about the intermittent leave continuously, and we took out the limit.
No, we still have that language in the bill.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much for that confirmation.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A87.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevail, and the amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A23-0172, which is also available for handout. Do you want to walk over?
Yeah.
Ms. Doyle-Fontaine, if you could.
Yes, Madam Chair. I do want to go just quickly go back to the motions that you all made. There might have been a couple of little things that will be covered by when we make our technical changes that may have been a few lines here and there that were not off, maybe in accordance with what we did earlier.
Okay.
So I just wanted to, that'll be part of your motion at the end to make any technical corrections that didn't quite conform with some of the lines in those motions. And I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that. So get that off the, get that on the record. So the A21-0172. So the lines 1.2 to 1.6, this deletes the language that's on the Senate language right now in R14 that talks about seasonal employers. And instead, then on line 1.6, this inserts that employee does not include seasonal employees as defined in subdivision 35. So it'll just delete the language that's currently in the Senate side regarding that and inserting this language. Then on R18, it from lines 1.7 down to the 1.
Could you just read the number of the amendment?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Clarification.
Madam Chair, we are looking at the A23-0172.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Did I say 071? That was an earlier amendment. My apologies. I'm looking at notes from my earlier one, so it lines if they're off. That's the reason.
I just wanted to correct for the record.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Edelson. So from lines 1.9 down until 1.25, this will add a definition into the definition section for seasonal employee. Again, and all of this language that's contained within this amendment did come from DEED in collaboration with members on this conference committee, as well as probably some input from MMB and other agencies. So that would be the new definition of seasonal employee. Then on line 1.26, down to 1.30, this would replace language that's currently contained in the Senate language, and we discussed this earlier, that we are going to be getting some new language surrounding procurement for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. DEED has tightened up the references to statutes and has tightened it up to only the relevant statutes that and not the entire chapter. So now this is to really the statutes that they feel they need the exemptions from, just for the purposes to get the chapter and the program up and running. And then, of course, they will be subject to them once the exemption goes away. And then we turn over to page 2, lines 2.1 to 2.8. It addresses seasonal employment denial for benefits. It states that they're denied while they're applicant is a seasonal employee. And then on lines 2.9 to 2.31, this provides new language for the appeals process. Again, this came from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. This clarifies some of the appeals process and updates some terminology regarding benefit, no longer being a benefit judge, it would be a hearing officer, and just making some, making it be able to work a little bit better for the department. So it's updating some terminology and the process there. Then over to page 3 of the amendment. This is on R48, again to the Senate language. This adds a couple of new subdivisions to the private plans, adds provisions and language regarding if a private plan by an employer that has a private plan, if they want to terminate the plan, their plan that they have, and how that would interact and what kind of notification that the employees would need to receive if the private plan was terminated. So this language on these lines includes how that would work and how it would be approved. On line 3.21 to 3.22, this would add seasonal employees to the wage reporting piece. So we just need to include that now that seasonal employees are included for the wage reporting. On line 323 to over to, it is stapled bad, so I kind of have to figure this out here, to 4.23. Currently the bill contains language regarding federal income tax withholding. Now, with this amendment, it adds language to how that would affect. So subdivision 1 on lines, again, I'm going back and forth between my two versions here. Subdivision 1, the income tax withholding, the federal income tax withholding, that's currently in the bill. There are just a couple little word changes there, but subdivisions 2 through 7 are new language coming in here. And like I said, it just, you'll see on line 3.29, it says benefits received under this chapter are subject to state income tax. And then it talks about how applicants are informed about how they are subject to federal and state income tax and withholding, et cetera, correction of errors, effect on payments, et cetera. So that is language on state income tax for the benefits. Then let me see, I need to go over to the next page. Madam Chair, continuing then on line 4.24, this is on R58 of the Senate language, we are deleting a subdivision. And a lot of these places, it was more difficult to do a page in line, so we're deleting some subdivisions. Instead of doing it that way, I'll try to point out the language that's the new that was inserted by deed. I've highlighted that on my copy here, so hopefully that helps everybody a little bit. So on line 4.26, like I said, it's language about overpayment because of misrepresentation. And on line 5.2, you'll see that the penalty assessed would equal to 15% of the amount overpaid. So that's where that 15% is there for the overpayment. Then on line 5.4, it talks about an applicant filing an appeal within 30 days after sending the determination. So they would have those 30 days to file an appeal. And then paragraphs D, 5.8 to 5.14 were already in the section. So that's existing already within the language except for on line 5.13, the department is authorized to issue determination of overpayment penalty under the subdivision. It was 12 months and now it's 24 months. So that's been pushed out a little bit. And then the subdivision 3 theft from lines 5.15 down to 5.29, that is all new language. So it talks about an individual is guilty of theft and it cites a criminal statute if they try to obtain benefits, you know, through false statements, et cetera. And then at the bottom, it does provide for, this would be a gross misdemeanor if the fraudulent activity is 500 or less, and it's a felony if the fraudulent activity is over $500. So that is being added to this in this amendment. Then on line 5.30, page 5 of the amendment, we are adding, clarifying that on this particular line, it's not referring to an employee, but it's the commissioner. And then we're deleting lines 13 to 15, which regard benefit overpayment still, and some of this interaction here. And we're adding a new subdivision on regarding court fees and collections. This would make it clear that if the department has to go to court, that any court fees overpaid for benefits, penalties, or interest, the amount of the court fees would just be added to the total amount due. And then also talks about if it's similar if there's a bankruptcy or some sort of offset for tax refunds. Also talks about how they would collect those fees, and that had not been contemplated previously within the bill, so it's being added here. Then on line 6.14, we have language starting here that is relating to the lien levy setoff language. This is on the Senate side that was discussed earlier. So this will simplify filing of lien notices. I think it's removing some Secretary of State requirements. So that is from lines 6.14 down to 6.23 of the amendment. Then on line 6.24 down to 6.29, it is language about the annual reports, and this would add annual report information on seasonal workers. It looks like we had to delete some lines, and then it's the only new language is on line 6.28 to 6.29 of the amendment, talking about information on collecting about those seasonal employees. So I just want to point that out. Then on the bottom of page 6, lines 630 on House or on R68 of the House language. I'm sorry, here I really messed up. I'm gonna have to go up here. This is language that's being added to the notice requirements. And so if an employer has seasonal workers, they do need to issue each seasonal employee a notice that the employee is not eligible to receive paid family and medical leaves while the employee is employed, you know, unless they meet that definition. So this would just require employers to provide that notice requirement to the seasonal employees. Then I think the next change we have, and again, I cannot find this on my amendment here. I am so sorry. It is all turned around here. My apologies. I'm just trying to find my place here. Okay, Madam Chair, my apologies. I found my place. Okay, so on line 7.10, on R69 in the Senate language, this was discussed earlier today. We already included this. This is about the severability. We're just belts and suspenders, including whether if it's something of interaction with state law in addition to federal law. So we already included that in earlier discussions. Then on R70, the Senate language, We are deleting the section on small business assistance grants, but we're replacing it. I will go quickly through a few of the little changes that DEED has made to the small business assistance grants. So on line 7.15, it is being added that the business, they already have to have 30 or fewer employees, but now we're adding less than $3 million in gross annual revenues. So that would be an additional qualifying for the small business assistance grants. Then on line 7.18, including that the grants may also be used for to increase another existing worker's wages in addition to what was already allowed for to hire a temporary worker. Then on line 7.20, the maximum grant is now set at $6,000 per eligible employer per calendar year. Then on line 7.21, it says the new language is that grants may be used to hire temporary workers or to increase wages. So that is clarifying to increase wages part. Let's see, the other language is on 7.26 to 7.27. Regarding the amount of grant requested is less than or equal to the additional costs incurred by the employer. Then on line 7.29 to 7.31, this is new language regarding that the applications need to be processed on a first received, first process basis within each calendar year until funding is exhausted. And then after it's exhausted, it clarifies that those applications are not eligible for reimbursement. Then in paragraph H, it just clarifies that unless additional funds are appropriated, the grants are maximum of $5 million, and that clarifies that this is coming from the Family and Medical Leave Benefit Insurance account. Then I think the last piece we have here is some changes to the actuarial study. And what is being changed here is that the commissioner of DEED is going to work in consultation with the commissioner of management and budget, and that the premium rates must be adjusted if the study indicates that needs to happen. But any adjustment would still be subject to the 1.2 annual premium or the cap on the premium percentage. So that's the maximum premium rate. And then in the actuarial study, just it needs to be provided and filed with the Legislative Reference Library. And then we have some additional changes here. The amendment is also deleting, which we discussed earlier, I think we adopted like sections 37 and 38. This was the stakeholder group on the Senate language and also the creation of the direct care provider account. So we're deleting those with this amendment. And then on page 9 of the amendment we're looking at right now, on R77, we would delete the current section 12, which is the $20 million that would be appropriated to the direct care provider account. And instead, this section would be inserted, and it would, again, it would still provide $20 million. It would be appropriated from the family and medical leave account, which that's not necessarily specified here, but I would like to, if we could, on line 9.12, after appropriated, insert from the family, is it family and medical benefit account? Madam Chair, family and
yes,
medical benefit account to the Commissioner of Human Services. Now, you may also realize this is be part of the technical changes that we're going to be making. There is already an appropriation to the Department of Human Services. I spoke with Ms. Noldner earlier, and we will figure out kind of where this goes. She's okay with it going right here. It should probably go above the transfer that's section 11, so we might put it at section 10. I just want to let you know that it might be somewhere else, but it will be included. Again, this is to take the place of the mechanism that the Senate passed, but this would now be run by the Commissioner of Human Services to provide reimbursement through an existing mechanism within the Home and Community-Based Workforce Incentive Fund. So it will go that way instead of as the way proposed by the Senate. So I can't really speak more to this concept, but this is my understanding as it's coming into this amendment. So with that, that's my lengthy description of the amendment. Hopefully you understood what I was saying. And if you have any questions, let me know, please.
Okay, so should we make an oral amendment then to the...
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. So the oral amendment, I'd like to make a motion to on lines 9.12 of the A23-0172 amendment, after the word commissioner, to add from the family and medical benefit insurance account. Would that be correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any questions about the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The oral amendment is passed. Any questions about the amendment as amended? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you for the section on direct care providers and working through that language so that we could get clarity. That was the line 9.10 to 9.21. This really will clarify the reimbursement of direct care workers, which include long-term care employees. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Other questions? Anybody?
I have another motion.
Madam
Chair, I do have another quick motion that I believe MMB or and some of our fiscal staff would like to be made. Earlier, it's on page R57, and earlier we adopted the section 24 on the Senate side regarding administrative costs, and the desire is to, on line, page 51, line 4, to delete lines 4 and 5, and then on line 51.6, delete everything before the period. So because of the program not being effective now until January 1, 2026, this sentence is no longer needed. Mm-hmm. And they would just like that to be removed, Madam Chair.
Okay. So I think we need to adopt the amendment and then make a motion to orally amend the bill. So on the motion to adopt the A... 23-0172. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment as amended is adopted. And then if I could get a motion to strike lines 51.4 to 51.6 before the period on R57.
So moved.
So moved. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair,
yes.
When you're ready, we would like to adopt this effective dates sheet, yes. Please, Madam Chair.
So next up, we will have, are those handed out? Do you guys have the effective dates with you?
No.
Okay. In that case, yeah. So we'll get those scanned and posted. In the meantime, we'll move on to the... I'll do that at the end.
She's on
again.
Okay. Yeah, we adopted.
Okay. So we have fiscal online. If they want to do just a brief walkthrough of the changes that we made, it's the fiscal chart that is dated 5/13/23, 11:27 a.m.
Just, Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
The timestamp of the spreadsheet is 11:27 a.m.
the appropriations to deed on line 25 will stay at $50,938,000 in fiscal year 24, $71,357,000 in fiscal year 25. And the base will change. Have to find, well, to cover the 6 month period where the program isn't started yet, but the new fiscal year there will be a base set. And I can't see where that is, so that will change. And commerce will stay the same in fiscal year 24 and 25 at 376 in fiscal year 24, 316 in fiscal year 25, and then the base will be set at 64 to cover those 6 months of administrative cost. Same with the Department of Labor and Industry. On line 37, the fiscal year 24 and 25 will stay the same, and then there will be 6 months worth of administrative costs covered with the $366,000 in fiscal year 26. So the rest of the appropriations will stay the same as we've presented them earlier today. Yeah, and then the footnote on line 92 describes the change that was made this afternoon. If there are any questions, I can take them.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Seeing none, can I please get a motion to move the revised spreadsheet?
So.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The revised spreadsheet is adopted. Next, did we get the effective dates passed out? Not yet?
Not yet. Where's the time?
11:27. We wait. It's being printed as we speak.
Madam Chair, you could make the motion for directing nonpartisan staff, just the technical motion, if you'd like.
Okay. So
it's a long paragraph. You could read it out.
I move to direct nonpartisan staff to prepare a conference committee report and incorporation of the spreadsheet. And I also move that the nonpartisan staff are empowered to make technical and conforming changes to the language approved by this conference committee in order to reflect the intent of this conference committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion is approved. And now we wait. We're just adopting the effective dates, which are very straightforward. While we wait for that to be handed out, does anyone want to make any closing comments? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to you and to Chair Richardson, I want to thank you for your tireless advocacy on behalf of Minnesotans as elected officials and in your work outside of the Capitol. I'm also grateful for the collaborative nature of this work, both including conference committee members directly in deliberation, but also engaging with outside advocates, the business community, and minority members. I've had multiple meetings with my local chamber and business owners on this topic, and particularly important to them was flexibility for small businesses, the option for intermittent leave, and capping the total number of weeks available annually. These accommodations, as well as an exclusion for our state's seasonal hospitality industry, have all been made in the conference committee report as amended. I also serve as the vice chair of the Commerce Committee in the House, and after conversations with Commissioner Grace Arnold and her staff at the Department of Commerce, the insurance industry, and Representative Dave Baker, I'm happy to see the language included that allows third parties to offer private PFML plans, which will give businesses additional flexibility as we move into implementation. That's a provision that is very important to our minority members in the House, and it's a new option for our insurance providers to bring to market. Beyond the changes that we've made in partnership to support the business community, this bill is going to make an incredible impact on Minnesotans. As a foster, adoptive, and biological mother, I know well just how precious and important the opportunity to bond with your children is. Mothers who wait at least 12 weeks to return to work after childbirth have a lower likelihood of depression and stress. Fathers who take at least 2 weeks of family leave are more likely to help and carry out childcare-related tasks when children are young, which is in turn can increase those chances that the birth parent is able to return to the workforce. The impact on these children is equally important. Sometimes we do have the tendency to look at policy in silos. But policy like paid family medical leave does not impact the lives of Minnesotans in a singular way. If we only look at the bonding leave option, research has shown that this can improve family life, the physical health of infants and birth parents, the postpartum mental health of mothers. It allows foster and adoptive families to build trust and intimacy. It has economic benefits like helping women return to the workforce, usually increasing household income and creating better outcomes and savings in our healthcare system and our economy. Minnesotans care for one another. This paid family medical leave program will help us get every child in Minnesota off to a great start. It's an investment for Minnesotans by Minnesotans, and it takes us one step closer to being the best state in the country for kids and families. I'm so proud of the work that we've done, and I'm excited to vote in support of this conference committee report. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Other comments or thoughts?
Sure.
Senator.
Sure. And I will also echo all of those things and thank both of the chairs. I have spent an awful lot of time on a bill that I was not an author of, probably more so than some of the bills I was authors of. And brought some of the same concerns to on my side, Senator Mann, and she has been a great partner in working on this. And I know, firsthand too, from job experiences that I've had when I've seen my female coworkers who, when they've gotten pregnant and they've had that decision, what do I come back to work? And more often than not, they chose to not come back to work. And then they were out of the workforce. And then it meant we had to find a new replacement for them, permanent, and go through the whole training process over again, which is a cost. And it's a cost of trying to find the replacement, the full-time replacement for them. So I just know from my firsthand experience. And also I will say I had a real luxury when our child was born that my wife stayed home and I just happened to work. And then magically we transitioned. She got a job and I got to stay home. And I wouldn't give up those couple of years at home with my son for anything. And that's a long period of time. And this isn't that, but this is a huge help to so many people. And I think the outcome on those kids when they have that time with a parent that they can bond with is just outstanding. So this is going to make a huge difference in people's lives. So
thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. We have the spreadsheet with the effective dates been posted in front of you. Any questions about the effective dates?
Madam Chair,
yes.
I have a quick clarifying question.
Yes.
So currently in the bill, it states on many of the sections something along the lines of except as provided under section that whatever 41 or mm-hmm. changed. This section is effective July 1, 2025. I'm not certain whether or not that except as provided under section clause needs to be now included in all of those effective dates, or if we are just going with this is effective for benefits as of January 1, 2026. So I'm not certain if there's an advocate here or someone or somebody can clarify, because here it just says proposed effective date. So with that, we would assume that it just should, this section is effective July 1 or January 1, 2026. So unless we know otherwise, that's what we would do. Madam Chair, I believe I see a nod that it would be okay to just say this section is effective and put these dates there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay. So do we need to...
No, just clarify that the effective dates are just as the dates that are provided in the proposed effective date.
Okay.
With no other language necessary.
Okay. Do we need a motion for that, or we just accept this as is and that goes in?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one more point.
Yes,
and this is on an earlier point. I just want to go back and just clarify for the record that there were some earlier provisions when I did the walkthrough, the side-by-side, and I said that these are placeholder, we're leaving them open. Then we adopted the amendment. I want to make clear that as you're adopting this, that you've adopted the amendment, you're also adopting those sections that we did not adopt earlier and might not have been on your sheet. So those are also being adopted with the amendments being incorporated. I just want to make that clear.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So a motion to move the effective dates.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The effective dates are moved. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to say a few words. I wanted to start with some gratitude, thank you. I've been carrying this bill for a number of years, and I have been working with many people to get to this point. And so the list is probably too long for me to identify each person independently. But I just want to recognize that the work that I have done on this bill over the last several years was followed by the work that was done by many others that were carrying this bill before I took it on. And it took a village to get to this point. And so I just want to lift up the good work that has been done and to also lift up the number of voices that are captured within this bill. Not only from members around this table, but from families, from advocates, from the departments, the business community, the insurance industry, the construction field, labor, the faith community, nonprofits. It is a collection of the diversity that our state reflects. And I also just want to lift up that it's a good day in Minnesota because this is something that Minnesotans want. And it was not lost on me, the recent poll that just was done here in Minnesota. The vast majority of Minnesotans have been waiting for paid family and medical leave. And I know we've talked a lot about how this can be an important way to keep folks in the workforce, particularly women, and recognizing that between 2016 and 2020, over 70% of pregnant Minnesotans were in the workforce. And the majority of them had to take some form of unpaid leave. And we recognize that there are so many benefits that come with having access to paid family and medical leave. The maternal mortality rates decrease, infant mortality rates decrease, hospitalizations decrease, dependence on long-term care decreases, dependence on social programs decreases, people stay within the workforce, and businesses don't have to continue to cover the cost of that constant turnover when people are in and out. But beyond that, I am just so proud because I know this bill also reflects the humanity that we as Minnesotans know that each other deserve, the ability to care for ourselves and the ability to care for our loved ones as well. And I know that not everyone got everything that they wanted within this space. But the goal that I had when I took on this bill was to build a plan that would cover the most Minnesotans because we have a history of leaving folks out. And I think it's important that we ensure that we are being as inclusive as possible. And I also like to thank you, Madam Chair, as well for being such a great partner within this work. And wouldn't have wanted to be on this journey with anyone else. So thank you for the opportunity to say a few words.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. Thank you, everyone, for all the incredible amount of work you have done just today alone, but really in the last many, many months and years in some cases, and the advocates for all their work. We are going to offer something that is going to change the lives of people, and it's going to make living easier, and it's going to take away burden from people. and we could not do that. We would not be sitting here today if it wasn't for every single one of you. So thank you very, very much. Minnesota thanks you. And we are not quite done yet. We have a little bit more to go until we cross that finish line, so we'll keep up the good work. And seeing no further business before this conference committee today, we are adjourned.